Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavata, yeah, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Text 12, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I want to cover a lot of ground today, even though it's quite a long session. So I'll, without reading the word-for-word translation, we can just chant. You can chant after me, please. Yan martya lila lilao payi kam sva yoga. Maya balang darshayata grihitam. Visma panang svasya chasau bhagardhe. Parang padang bhushana bhushanangam. Translation: the Lord appeared in the mortal world by His internal potency, Yoga Maya. He came in His eternal form, which is just suitable for His pastimes. These pastimes were wonderful for everyone, even for those proud of their own opulence, including the Lord Himself, in His form as the Lord of Vaikuntha. Thus, His Sri Krishna's transcendental body is the ornament of all ornaments. Purport: in conformity with the Vedic hymns, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam, the personality of Godhead is more excellent than all other living beings within all the universes in the material world. He is the chief of all living entities. No one can surpass Him or be equal to Him in wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, or renunciation. When Lord Krishna was within this universe, He seemed to be a human being because He appeared in a manner just suitable for His pastimes in the mortal world. He did not appear in human society in His Vaikuntha feature with four hands because that would not have been suitable for His pastimes. But in spite of His appearing as a human being, no one was or is equal to Him in any respect in any of the six different opulences. Everyone is more or less proud of His opulence in this world, but when Lord Krishna was in human society, He excelled all His contemporaries within the universe. When the Lord's pastimes are visible to the human eye, they are called prakat, and when they are not visible, they are called aprakat. In fact, the Lord's pastimes never stop, just as the sun never leaves the sky. The sun is always in its right orbit in the sky, but it is sometimes visible and sometimes invisible to our limited vision. Similarly, the pastimes of the Lord are always current in one universe or another. And when Lord Krishna disappeared from the transcendental abode of Dwaraka, it was simply a disappearance from the eyes of the people there. It should not be misunderstood that His transcendental body, which is just suitable for the pastimes in the mortal world, is in any way inferior to His different expansions in the Vaikuntha lokas. His body manifested in the material world is transcendental par excellence, in the sense that His pastimes in the mortal world excel His mercy displayed in the Vaikuntha lokas. In the Vaikuntha lokas, the Lord is merciful toward the liberated or nitya mukta living entities. But in His pastimes in the mortal world, He is merciful even to the fallen souls who are nitya badha, or conditioned forever. The six excellent opulences which He displayed in the mortal world by the agency of His internal potency, Yoga Maya, are rare even in the Vaikuntha lokas. All His pastimes are manifested not by the material energy but by His spiritual energy. The excellence of His Rasalila at Vrindavan and His householder life with 16,000 wives is wonderful even for Narayana in Vaikuntha, and is certainly so for other living entities within this mortal world. His pastimes are wonderful even for other incarnations of the Lord, such as Sri Rama, Nrisimha, and Varaha. His opulence was so super excellent that His pastimes were adored even by the Lord of Vaikuntha, who is not different from Lord Krishna himself. Yesterday, what I'm going to speak on now was planned for yesterday, but I'll do it today instead. I got ran a little late yesterday. The topic is Sri Vaishnavas and Gauriya Vaishnavas, or Sri Vaishnavism and Gauriya Vaishnavism. I thought to speak on this topic. Please turn off your phone, whoever may have their phone still on. I elected to speak on this topic knowing that there are quite a few people of Sri Vaishnava family background here in the Seattle area, and quite a few of them visit here also, especially when two eminent personalities of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya visit here, which they do regularly. One is the Chinna Jiya Swami and the other is Velaguri Krishna. There may be some persons of Sri Vaishnava background here also. Actually, we're all of Sri Vaishnava background, in as much as we as Gauriyas see all the great acharyas of all the Sampradayas as not being something separate from us or different from us. They're all our gurus. Particularly Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur stated that the philosophy of the Ramanuja Sampradaya is the Vithi Swarup, or it's the very form, the very foundation of the philosophy of the Gauriyas, his Vishishtadvaita. Translated as qualified monism, is the basis of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Achinta Bheda Bhid Tattva, as clearly distinguished from Shankara's Kevaladvaitavada. Just it was known as Advaitavada, but then later there came Vishishtadvaita, Shuddhadvaita, Dvaitadvaita. So Kevaladvaita is a rigid monism, but Vishishtadvaita professes monism, but with qualified. There's oneness, and there are other things. There are specialties within that also. In other words, it's not only oneness. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expressed this as achintya bheda bhed tattva. Of course, there are many differences also in the technical presentation and even in the concept. One of the main differences between the Sri Vaishnavas and the Gauriya Vaishnavas is the concept of who is the... It's a bit difficult to say linguistically, because we know that all the forms of the Lord are in one sense equal, but still in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, the concept is that Narayana is the original form of the Lord, and all other forms expand from him. Whereas the Gauriya Vaishnavas say that Krishna is the original form based on the evidence of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. That's the main pramana or evidence, and there are others given also. Srila Jiva Goswami has discussed this elaborately. Gauriya Vaishnavas also recognize Brahma Sanghita, of which the fifth chapter is available, and in which again and again Govindam Adi Purusham is mentioned. So there's some difference there. And I read this verse in purport today because this is interesting. This verse speaks of parampadam, which is a common term in Sri Vaishnav terminology to mean the spiritual world. In the Sri Vaishnav tradition, there are 108 divya deshams, or divine places, of which one of them, is Parampada Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So this verse, in this verse, and Srila Prabhupada elaborates on that in the purport, that the form of Krishna is so exquisite that even Narayan in the spiritual world becomes attracted to that. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada gives some comparison that the Lord of Vaikuntha is very merciful toward the liberated souls in the spiritual world, but in his pastimes in the material world, he is merciful even to the fallen souls. Actually, in the opening section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's considerable discussion about this point. If we say that Krishna has appeared in this world via the agency of the Purusha avatar, the Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, that's true, it's stated in Shastra. But then the Kshiradakshaya Vishnu is an expansion of an expansion of expansion of expansion of Krishna. So you can take it either way. Actually, we have no argument with those who say that Vishnu is the original form, because that's true. If you consider it from the point of view of looking from this material world toward the opulence of the Lord, then Vishnu is the original. In terms of opulence, in terms of manifestation of opulence, Vishnu is supreme, because that's his bhav, and that's the whole point of why the Gauriyas, from the point of view of Rasavicha, they see Krishna has Krishna is the sweetest. Chaitanya Charitamrita states, Madhurja Bhagavatasa, the essence of God's godliness is his sweetness. If we take the essence of his sweetness to be his opulence, then we may opt for Vishnu in Vaikuntha, Narayana in Vaikuntha, as being supreme. But actually, as our acharyas have pointed out, even in terms of opulence, the opulence of Vrindavan in the spiritual world is far more than that of Vaikuntha, but the opulence is not the predominating factor. It's a different mood altogether. So, although there may be some discussion over that, from Krishna's point of view, from God's point of view, let's leave Krishna, not state Krishna here, from God's point of view, Krishna is the supreme form, and as or the original form from which all other forms expand, although they're eternal and they're non-different. So there's difference and non-difference. Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, has identified four qualities of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, that even the Narayan forms in Vaikuntha don't have. These are the special qualities. Madhurja Bhagavatasa, sweetness is the essential quality of God, of what makes God God. So there are four special sweetnesses of Krishna that even Narayan doesn't possess. One is his Venu Madhuri. Narayan doesn't have a flute. Krishna does. So his flute and his flute playing, his Rupa Madhuri, Krishna's form, is so sweet that, as stated in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, it attracts even Narayan in Vaikuntha. Then Leela Madhuri, the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. There's nothing to compare with Krishna, the sweetness of Vrindavan pastimes. That's, although sweetness is not at all lacking in Vaikuntha, but it overflows to the ultimate degree in, even though it's unlimited in Vaikuntha, still it's much more so. in Vrindavan. And there is also the prema madhuri, the sweetness of Krishna's love and his loving devotees. So Krishna has these special sweetnesses that qualifies him in this way. Now, this is there was a big discussion about this when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying in Sri Rangam during 4 months of the Chaturmas, which is going on at the present time, but we don't feel it here. The Chaturmas is 4 months, literally means 4 months, which are observed by mendicants and others in India, but particularly by mendicants who are traveling, because they stop traveling. It's pretty difficult to travel when there's lots of rain and all the roads are muddy. Yeah, so mendicants stop traveling. Householders are also expected to observe Chaturmas in various ways. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed for 4 months of the rainy season in Sri Rangam. He stayed in Navadvip for 24 years, in Puri for 18 plus 6 years. I say 18 plus 6 because during the 6 years he was coming and going. And then after that he remained in Puri for 18 years. So he stayed in two places for a very long time. And the place that he stayed in most after these two other places is Sri Rangam, the capital of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. So that's a noteworthy point. While he was there, he discussed with his host, Venkata Bhatta, who is the uncle of Gopala Bhatta, who became one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, compiled the Hari Bhakti Vilas together with Sanatan Goswami, rules and regulations for Gauriyas to follow, especially householder Gauriyas. This is recorded, one discussion that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had with Venkata Bhatta about how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in a very joking way, but shastric and philosophical way, established that actually Krishna is not superior to Narayan because he is the same as Narayan, but still he's superior. So this is summarized in one purport of the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, which you may now kindly display. You ready there? Yeah. So this is summarized in one purport of the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 18, text 23. The translation and commentary by Srila Prabhupada. And this verse is spoken by Lakshmi Devi. Svatang mamapyachuta sishni vanditang karambujang yatvad adhai satvatam bibharshi mam lakshma varenya mayaya ka ishvaras yehitang uhitung vibhurt iti. She prays to Narayana, Krishna. O infallible one, your lotus palm is the source of all benediction. Therefore, your pure devotees worship it, and you very mercifully place your hand on their heads. I wish that you may also place your hand on my head, for although you already bear my insignia of golden streaks on your chest, I regard this honor as merely a kind of false prestige for me. You show your real mercy to your devotees, not to me. Of course, you are the supreme absolute controller, and no one can understand your motives. Purport. In many places, the Shastras describe the supreme personality of Godhead as being more inclined toward his devotees than toward his wife, who always remains on his chest. Of course, she's also a devotee. The Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya is known as Sri because, of course, the background and basis of all Sampradayas is the Supreme Lord himself. But that sampradaya is the four Vaishnava sampradayas are manifested from four great personalities, and the Sri Vaishnava sampradaya is manifested from Sri, which means Lakshmi. That's why it's known as the Sri Vaishnava sampradaya. So she's a devotee, but she doesn't think she's a devotee. Now, we shouldn't misunderstand this when it's said that the Lord is more inclined to his devotees than his wife. We shouldn't misunderstand that Lakshmi is some kind of non-entity. She's in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, just as in the Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Ultimately, we give more importance to Radha than to Krishna. And similarly, in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, when you start to get esoteric, there's more attention given even to Sri for the very reason that she's the feminine nature is more compassionate, so she can take us to the Lord. So when it's said that he's more inclined toward his devotees than toward his wife, that means that it gives great importance to his devotees, and the function of being a wife. He's attached. The point is that he's attached to devotion more than to not exactly to Lakshmi. He loves her superlatively, but to the position or function of being a wife. The point is that he's attracted by bhakti, and of course she has unlimited bhakti also. So quoting. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada quotes in the Purport from Srimad Bhagavatam, Natata me priyatama atma yonir na shankaraha nacha sankarshano na shrir naivatma chayatha bhavan. Here Krishna plainly says that his devotees are more dear to him than Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarshan, the original cause of creation, the goddess of fortune, or even his own self. Actually, this is spoken to Uddhava, and it says, Krishna says, not more dear to me are Brahma, who is born from my very body, Shankara, Lord Shiva, Sankarshan, my brother, Balaram, and Sri, my wife, Lakshmi, and even my very self. And he was going to say, my devotee is more dear. And because he's speaking philosophically, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that he was going to say that, but it just came out that he says, you are more dear to me, Uddhava, than all of them, because Uddhava himself is a great devotee. And Uddhava was sent to Vrindavan to find out that the unsophisticated gopis of Vrindavan are, in his estimation, far greater than himself. Now, we don't want to start saying that, oh, the gopis are better and this and that. From our position, they're all way, 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 way up there. So among themselves, they may say such things. And we may repeat, because in Shastra, and we're supposed to repeat Shastra, but we shouldn't think that there's something lacking in Uddhava or in Lakshmi, because these descriptions are there. It's not that there's anything lacking in them. Their love for Krishna is infinite, but there are higher grades even in infinity. And that can be proved mathematically. Even if you say infinity is a mathematical set, then mathematically there are some forms of infinity which are more than others. It's an easy thing to understand. If you take, take the number 1, add to it the number 4, add to it the number 7, add to it the number 10. You get a set of numbers you can go on infinitely with two numbers missing in between, right? So that's infinite. And you add it all up and it's infinity. And if you take the numbers in between and add those up, that's also infinite, but it's more, because if you take 2 and 3, you can understand. So there's a simple mathematical formula to show that some forms of infinity are more than others. So, elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami says, Neimam varincho nabavo nashriya rapyanga sangshaya prasadam lebhire gopi yattat prapavi muktidat. Shukadeva Goswami describing specifically describing Yashoda. Shukadeva becomes astonished while describing the mercy that Krishna gave to Yashoda by allowing her to tie him up. By allowing her to tie Krishna up. So Srila Prabhupada states here, the Supreme Lord who can award liberation to anyone, that's the point, he can award liberation to anyone, but he allowed himself to be tied up by Yashoda. He can award liberation to anyone, showed more mercy toward the gopis than to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, or even the goddess of fortune, who is his own wife and is associated with his body. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam also states, Nayang Sriyanga Unitanta Rate Prasada Svaryoshitang Nalina Gandharu Changkuto Nyaha Rasod Savesya Bhuja Dandagrihita Kanta Labdhashishangya Udagad Rajasundarinam. The gopis receive benedictions from the Lord that neither Lakshmi Devi nor the most beautiful dancers in the heavenly planets could attain. In the Rasa dance, the Lord showed his favor to the most fortunate gopis by placing his arms on their shoulders and dancing with each of them individually. No one can compare with the gopis who receive the causeless mercy of the Lord. Continuing the purport, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said that no one can receive the real favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without following in the footsteps of the gopis. Gopi anugatya bine aishwarja gane bajile ho napai brajendra nandane. If one worships the Supreme Lord in a mood of considering him to be very opulent, but doesn't follow in the footsteps of the gopis, he can't attain to Krishna in Vrindavan. Yeah, so continuing the purport, even the goddess of fortune could not receive the same favor as the gopis, although she underwent severe austerities and penances for many years. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discusses this point with Venkata Bhat in Chaitanya Charitamrita, as described. The Lord inquired from Venkata Bhat, your worshipable goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, always remains on the chest of Narayana, and she is certainly the most chaste woman in the creation. However, my lord is Lord Sri Krishna, a cowherd boy engaged in tending cows. And she's the wife of the lord of Vaikuntha. So why did she run after a boy looking after cows? Why is it that Lakshmi, being such a chaste wife, wants to associate with my lord? Just to associate with Krishna, Lakshmi abandoned all transcendental happiness in Vaikuntha and for a long time accepted vows and regulative principles and performed unlimited austerities. Venkata Bhata replied, Lord Krishna and Lord Narayana are one and the same, but the pastimes of Krishna are more relishable due to their sportive nature. They are very pleasing for Krishna's Shaktis. Since Krishna and Narayana are both the same personality, Lakshmi's association with Krishna did not break her vow of chastity. Rather, it was in great fun that the goddess of fortune wanted to associate with Lord Krishna. The goddess of fortune considered that her vow of chastity would not be damaged by her relationship with Krishna. Rather, by associating with Krishna, she could enjoy the benefit of the Rasa dance. If she wanted to enjoy herself with Krishna, what fault is there? Why are you joking so about this? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is prodding a bit. You see, Lakshmi looks like she's being a little unchaste. She's not being unchaste. Krishna's the same as Narayan. Why are you joking like this? It's a little risky, isn't it, to joke like... Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, I know there is no fault in the goddess of fortune, but still she couldn't enter into the Rasa dance. We hear this from the revealed scriptures. The authorities of Vedic knowledge met Lord Ramachandra in Dandakaranya, and by their penances and austerities, they were allowed to enter into the rasa dance. This is described in the Nectar of Devotion and elsewhere, how certain rishis in the forest of Dandakaranya saw Lord Rama, and they wanted to worship him in the mood of female consorts. But Rama said, no, it's not possible this time because I have a vow of only one wife. You come next time when I come as Krishna, then you can join me. So there are many, the Garga Samhita describes, there are many different personalities who joined Krishna as new gopis. So these are the Rishichari gopis, then the Shrutichari gopis, the Upanishads, personified Upanishads, who became gopis. The Yajna Sitas, when Ramachandra, after Sita Devi returned to the earth whence she had come, Lord Ramachandra went on performing yajnas, big public yajnas. He needs to do so with his wife. So every time he did one, he made a deity of Sita. And all those deities of Sita said, so what do we do now? He said, come around next time. They came as gopis. Then when Rama had first gone to Janakpuri, or the place of Janak Maharaj, and he took Sita from there, but there were so many other young girls who thought, well, we'd also like to be Rama's wife. Okay, next time. So there are so many different gopis. So the rishis in Dandakaranya, they were able to join by their austerities, and Lakshmi, who's constitutionally a greater personality and who is the wife of Vishnu, she couldn't join. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, can you tell me why the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, could not get that opportunity? To this, Venkatabhata replied, I cannot enter into the mystery of this incident. I am an ordinary living being. My intelligence is limited and I am always disturbed. How can I understand the pastimes of the Supreme Lord? They are deeper than millions of oceans. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him the answer. Venkatabhata said, I can't understand this. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, okay, I'll give you the answer. This is the answer. Lord Krishna has a specific characteristic. He attracts everyone's heart by the mellow of his personal conjugal love. By following in the footsteps of the inhabitants of the planet known as Vrajaloka or Goloka Vrindavan, one can attain the shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. However, the inhabitants of that planet do not know that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unaware that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the residents of Vrindavan like Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Devi, and the gopis treat Krishna as their beloved son or lover. Mother Yashoda accepts him as her son and sometimes binds him to a grinding mortar. Krishna's cowherd boyfriends think he is an ordinary boy and get up on his shoulders. In Golok Vrindavan, no one has any desire other than to love Krishna. So Lakshmi couldn't enter the rasa dance because she wanted to maintain thinking that I'm Lakshmi. But she has to follow the gopis, become subordinate to them. Then she can join, but she couldn't. So the conclusion is that one cannot associate with Krishna unless he has fully received the favor of the inhabitants of Raja Bhumi. Therefore, if one wants to be delivered by Krishna directly, he must take to the service of the residents of Vrindavan who are unalloyed devotees of the Lord. So there's a difference there between Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya and the Gaurya Vaishnava Sampradaya. However, as I see it, we need not emphasize the difference so much and argue. And from what I see from the Sri Vaishnava devotees themselves, most of them also, they're not in a mood of arguing with our devotees, but mostly they're very appreciative of what Srila Prabhupada has done. And they're also getting some life from that. Yeah, from the very beginning of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, that means Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance and preaching, Gopal Bhatta joined him from South India. Prabodhananda Saraswati joined him from the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. And we find in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Rupa and Sanatan, they quote verses from the Stotra Ratna of Yamunacharya, one of the important works. There are so many important literary works of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, and at least three verses are quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which Tom Shila Rupa Charitai Paramaprakrishtai, Ulangita Trividasima Utashasha, and the other one, which I can't remember, three verses are quoted there. From Yamunacharya Stotara. Yamunacharya was the one of the gurus of Ramanujacharya. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who stated that the Vaishnava, Sri Vaishnava, philosophy or teachings, or Siddhanta is the best word, is the foundation of the Gaudiya Vaishnava teachings. He himself, among his profuse writings, he recast in Bengali verse some selected verses from Stotra Ratna, and that appears among his corpus of songs as the series of songs known as Yamuna Bhavavali. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, also among his great work in writing and publishing, he published a short but important work of Ramanujacharya's, what's that called? I can't remember. I should have. No. Sri Bhashya is a very big work. It's very. He published with translation, but I should have made more research, but I didn't. I should have got that down. So, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his reviving and giving a new direction or face to the Gaudiya Sampradaya, he researched much from the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, and specifically the introduction of Vaishnava Sannyas was very much after studying that in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. He brought to Mayapur scholars, Sri Vaishnava scholars. So there's much appreciation there, mutual appreciation. So let's have a look at the similarities, differences. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he promoted Prema Pumarato Mahan, although the four goals of life are understood to be Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, liberation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that none of these are very important. The highest goal of life is to attain Krishna Prema, which is something unique. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Anarpita Chiring Chirat Karunya Avatirno Kalao Samapyata Mundra Tajvala Rasam Swabhakti Shriyam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave that which had not been given for a very long time previously. That devotion to himself, resplendent, highest form of devotion. So generally, all the followers of the Vedas, or particularly Vedanta, they recognize the dharma, artha, kama, moksha, the four goals of human life. And the followers of the Vedanta, they put most stress on moksha. And the Kevaladvaitavadis, the monists following Shankara, they conceive moksha as being merging into Brahman and becoming free from Maya, merging into an undifferentiated oneness. The Vaishnavas, headed by Ramanuja, they define moksha as attaining the position of Vishnu Kainkarya, or service to Lord Narayan in the spiritual world. So they emphasize moksha. We should endeavor for moksha. But their idea of moksha is not just to be free from this world, but to attain to service to the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world. Whereas Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, they don't find even the idea of moksha is not as important to them as love for the Supreme Lord. And in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they emphasize very much service. And of course, Gaudiya Vaishnavas do also. But they say that the service, that is the substratum of love for God. The main point is the love, of which service and love, they're in spiritual existence. They're practically synonymous. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu puts the emphasis that we have to develop love of God. Now, in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they have two ways of attaining moksha. One is called bhakti yoga and the other is called prapatti. Now, what they call bhakti and what we call bhakti, although the word is a very common word, it commonly appears in Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere. But their understanding of what bhakti means, the way they define the term, is considerably different to the way that we define it. And that might, if we're discussing with Sri Vaishnavas, that might cause some confusion. Because when we say bhakti, we have an understanding of bhakti as being the intrinsic nature of the soul, of service to Krishna, in loving service to Krishna, devotional service, loving devotional service. And we also define bhakti as the nine processes of bhakti: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, Itipung Sapita Vishnu, Bhaktis Chain Navalakshana. These are bhakti is defined in these nine categories, or nine characteristics. But bhakti yoga, as they see it, it's a process which, it's a very difficult process, which can be undertaken by twice-born persons. That means males born in Brahmana families. And it may require more than one lifetime to become perfect in it. It involves following one's dharma as a Brahmana, all the different rituals and functions. One should follow it very properly. And one or more of the vidyas, or the vidya generally means knowledge. Here it means a system of the Upanishad. So it's quite different to that of the what the Gauriyas conceive of as bhakti yoga. Ramanuja also calls bhakti, he gives as a synonym of it as anusmriti, or continuous remembrance. Anu means following, so remembering, 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 at every moment remembering the Lord. And he gives the it's an uninterrupted meditation. He gives the example like pouring oil in an uninterrupted stream. So like that, one's bhakti, he gives the idea that continuous remembrance of the Supreme Lord. Now the other process to attain moksha, or Vishnu Kainkarya in Parampadam, the spiritual world, according to the Sri Vaishnavas, is by prapatti. which is a word probably, maybe, many of you have not heard, but it's synonymous with the term Sharanagati, which is also a term used within the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And of course, it's also very important within the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. It's considered a different method. So the Bhakti Yoga is considered a very difficult method of meditation. But Prapatti or Prapanna is Atmanivedanam, giving oneself to Krishna, or Narayan in this case. That means the mood of giving oneself in surrender to the Lord. And that begins simply with bowing down to Him or offering respect to Him. Just by doing this, one endears oneself to the Lord. So this is much easier to do. And in this Kali Yoga, it's much more practicable and desirable. And the same definition of prapatti, Sharanagati, is used by the, well, actually was quoted first by the Sri Vaishnavas, because they chronologically in this Kali Yoga they came earlier. The verse Anukulyasya Sankalpa Pratikulyasya Varjanam Rakshishatiti Vishvaso Guptritve Varanang Tata Atmanakshepa Karpanye Sharvirha Sharanagati. The six angas or limbs of Srila Prabhupada translated Sharanagati, of surrender to the Supreme Lord, or the way Sharanagati, the way of taking shelter. How do we take shelter of the Lord? Krishna says, Mame kam sharanam raja, take shelter of me only. In his purport to that verse, Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse which I just stated, Anukul Yasya Sankalpa, the six limbs of bhakti, Sharanagati, taking shelter, prapatti, submitting oneself. They are to accept only that which is favorable for advancing in Krishna consciousness, and to reject, to steadfastly reject everything which is unfavorable for advancement in Krishna consciousness. Always have faith that Krishna is protecting me and maintaining me. Atmanikshepa, to literally throw oneself at Krishna with the faith that Krishna will catch me. It's like jumping out of a burning building and you don't want to jump, it's a long way to go, but someone's underneath and says, don't worry, I'll catch you. Throw ourselves. Yes, I have no choice. I'm in this burning fire of material existence. I have to throw myself and Krishna will catch me. So with that faith, throwing oneself at Krishna and karpanye, or humility. So these are the six symptoms of prapatti or sharanagati, which both Gauriyas and Sri Vaishnavas accept. And according to Sri Vaishnavas, anyone can take this up. It's not required that you're born in a Brahmin family as a male. Anyone can take it up. And in one lifetime, they can achieve perfection despite whatever background we may have had before. And in fact, you can immediately achieve perfection. Although there is a major, or traditionally there has been a major division within that sampradaya, but although that division is there nowadays, it's now largely conventional. In other words, the two parties, Vardagalai, Tengalai, they get on with each other. They don't fight with each other anymore, hardly. So they had a philosophical, over various issues, they had various philosophical issues in which they deeply disagreed with each other. It's in summation, you could say it's something like Catholics and Protestants. Something like that. The path of faith and the path of works. Those who believe that if you just sakrindeva prapanno yashtavasmi tichayachate, if one just surrenders once, Lord Rama says, then I give you my shelter. What is the next line? Abhayam sarvada tasmai dada. Okay, thank you. It is my firm vow that if anyone says to me, if one comes to me and surrenders to me, I will give them protection and award them fearlessness. This was in relationship to Vibhishana, a very untrustable person coming from the enemy camp. Those who emphasize, okay, once you surrender, that's it. And others say, no, yeah, surrender is an ongoing process. It's not just that you say, okay, I surrendered once, but you have to show it by going on surrendering. So it's something like the Catholic, Protestant, not exactly Catholic, Protestant, but the path of faith and the path of works. You just have to believe in Jesus. And others say, no, you have to do what Jesus said. It's not just enough to say, I believe in Jesus. So Srila Prabhupada would say, you have to do what Jesus said. If you're a real follower, this divide is exemplified in what is called the Markatanyai and Majaranyai. The Markata, the monkey, holds on to the mother. And the mother jumps around here and there, being a monkey, but the baby monkey holds on. So the baby has to hold on and get the mother's protection. Whereas the Majara, which is the word for a cat, the cat simply picks up the baby kitten without any effort on the kitten's part. So the Varigalai, they say, well, we're more like the monkey. That God is willing to protect you, but you have to hold on to him. And the Tengalai, they say that, no, it's God's causeless mercy, that's all. Just like the kitten is protected by the cat. She doesn't, the kitten doesn't have anything much to do with it. Just the mother, out of her kind nature, simply looks after the kitten. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, commenting on this, said, when he was asked, which one are we? He said, well, not really either of them, more or less a combination of both. And he gave the example that if someone has fallen in a well, someone may throw him a rope out of mercy, but still he has to catch on to it. So he gave that example, that it's not so much, it's not only our effort, it's not principally our effort, nor is it that we simply wait for the Lord's mercy without doing anything, but we accept the Lord's causeless mercy. Without someone throwing a rope, you can't get out of the well, but still, you have to hold on to the rope. If you say, well, okay, you throw me a rope, but you still didn't save me. But you just have to hold on, and then I'll pull you up. So that's the example given. So practically no one follows, although bhakti yoga is theoretically accepted as an upai, a means to come out of this material existence and attain moksha, but no one practically practices it. It may have been for a previous age. Everyone practices prapatti only. The idea, you surrender to Krishna, take refuge. Of course, I'm saying Krishna out of habit, but to Narayana. And you take refuge in that, is the essence. And then anything you do, devotional activities after that, that's something extra. But once you've surrendered, you don't really need to do anything. You could see that a misapplication of this could lead to laziness in devotional service. And we do, as we see in Krishna, say, well, you just believe in Jesus. And they don't do anything more than, and they don't think they need to do anything. Jesus says, say, I'm saved. I'm saved. I what was it? I was born again, washed in the blood of Jesus. So the idea is that anything that one does in the service of the Lord, that's very, the real thing is surrender, and then anything else you do in his service, then you may do for his pleasure, but it's not that you get anything more or less from it. Of course, there may be different interpretations of this and sub-schools. Of course, everyone is supposed to follow their dharma, varnashram dharma. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also revolutionary in saying that varnashram dharma is external to bhakti, because dharma as practiced in this world, it's a bridge. One name of Krishna is Dharma Setu. He is the bridge composed of dharma for crossing from this world to the spiritual world. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that this varnashram dharma is actually external, eho bhajya. It's external to the real essence of spiritual service to Krishna. So in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, as in all Vedic Sampradayas, one has to follow one's dharma as given in Shastra. And in fact, the ones who don't follow this, they're excluded from Vedic society. Buddhists, Jains, Charvakas, if you don't follow this Varnashram. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't say not to follow Varnashram, but he said that it's not of the essence. So he clarified that. The whole idea is that one should, in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, one should follow one's dharmas to please the Lord. Swakarmana tamabhyacha siddhim vindati manava. So the idea is that one follows one's dharma, but not with the aim of attaining anything material, but to please the Lord. And on top of that, one may do other devotional acts. So this verse, anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam, Srila Prabhupada quotes that. Yeah, that's just the beginning of the verse. Srila Prabhupada quotes that in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, 66. Following Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vidyabhushan, who also presented in that commentary, Jiva Goswami has also commented on that. This verse is said to be from the Vaishnava Tantra. Vishwanath Chakravarti attributes the verse to the Vayu Purana. It's also featured in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Jiva Goswami comments that the essence of this verse is accepting the Lord as one's guardian or master. That follows the Sri Vaishnava idea, that the acceptance of him as our master, and the Atma Nivedan, or giving oneself to him, that is the function from our side. But that is done because we accept him as our master. So that follows the Sri Vaishnava understanding. This verse is also quoted in the Hari Bhakti Vilasa, which was, of course, largely compiled by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. It's authored, the name is given Sanatana Goswami, so it was a joint effort, but it appears that it was largely the effort of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who had vast training in Shastra. Of course, Jiva Goswami also, but in these sections of Shastras which describe the duties of Vaishnavas. That comes in the 11th chapter of Hari Bhakti Vilas, in which that's described as being Sharanapati Lakshanam. So Sharanapati, Sharanagati, Prapatti, Prapanna, these are all synonyms. Now, toward the end of that section, there's a verse given by, most of the verse of Hari Bhakti Vilas is quoted from Shastra. It's a compendium of verses from Shastra with a few verses of commentary or summary like this. So in there is a verse, Atachara bahuvidhaha shishta charanusarata anusarataha Shri Vaishnavanam kartavya likyante trasamasataha. So, Sanatan and Gopal Bhatta say there are many types of achar and shishtachar, which are similar terms, proper behavior, the behavior of respectable people. Then he says, here I will succinctly describe Sri Vaishnavanam Kartavya, the duties of the Sri Vaishnavas. Of course, it could be understood to mean Vaishnava in general, but the term is given of the Sri Vaishnavas. Mm. In the 22nd chapter of the Madhya Lila, if we study very carefully, Madhya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Sanatana Goswami about the principles of Sharanagati, giving this verse, Anukulyasya Sankalpa, Pratikulyasya Varjanam, and so on. Then he goes on to describe the principles and details of Sadhana Bhakti. So from this, we can understand that the two are considered one entity, practically. We can understand that Sharanagati is expressed by following the principles of Sadhana Bhakti. That one has to have this one has to have this spirit of surrender to Krishna. Then one can perform Sadhana Bhakti in such a way that sadhana will lead to siddhi. Sadhana is meant to lead to siddhi, but it can be that one performs the activities of sadhana and makes rapid advancement. It can be that someone performs the activities of sadhana and hardly advances at all. That's why it's a great misunderstanding to think that Krishna consciousness means initiation, 16 rounds, 4 regulated principles, bus, finish, nothing else more to do. But it's a question of attitude. It's Krishna consciousness. So consciousness of Krishna. What is that consciousness? Savior, sevak, bhava. The understanding that Krishna is to be served. I am his servant. I am meant to serve him. Krishna te kila cheshta. Everything I do should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. So sadhana bhakti is to be performed. All the rules and regulations are there with the attitude. Anukalyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishyatiti vishvaso guptritve varanang tata atmanikshepa karpanye shagavirtha. Sharanagati, with this attitude, in relationship to Krishna. that's why it's also required to have a guru, to guide one, who one should hear from regularly, observe regularly, who is supposed to embody those principles of Sharanagati, so that one can imbibe that. Without that, one can perform bhakti, the sadhana bhakti, but the advancement will be very slow or practically negligible. It is required that one has this attitude. Dikka kale bhakta kare atta samarpana. At the time of initiation, the devotee surrenders his very self. But then after diksha, then one performs sadhana bhakti. So the two are put together in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions. First to Sanatana Goswami about how to perform devotional service. First of all, he describes the principle of Sharanagati. Then he describes all the details of sadhana bhakti. With the idea that, so Krishna, he's ready to protect us and accept us, so do it. So how do we do it? Well, we have to prepare us. We do it at this stage by following all the principles of sadhana bhakti. Then we become qualified for entering into more intimate service. As is often pointed out, changing the subject here, within the general topic of Sri Vaishnavas and Gauriya Vaishnavas, the cult of, within the broader cult of Sri Vaishnavas and the cult of Andal is very prominent. We'll find in most Sri Vaishnava temples, they don't, just like we have Radha Krishna together, they don't have Lakshmi and Narayan together, they have a separate temple for Lakshmi, or Tayar. And then many also have a separate temple for Andal, who is the lover of Narayana. She appeared in this world, apparently as an ordinary girl, but she envisioned herself as a gopi. And ultimately, she only wanted to marry the Lord, which she eventually did. She was married to him. Her work, Tirupavai, that's very famous among Sri Vaishnavas, and that is chanted by them. It's a song of love to the Lord, very similar to that of the gopis, of as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. She eventually married the Lord Ranganatha in the mood of the gopis who prayed to Katyayani to get Krishna as their husband. She also wanted, so the gopis that's described in Srimad Bhagavatam, they wanted to have Krishna as their husband. Katyayani maha maye maha yogin yathishwari nanda gopusatang devi pating me kuru te namaha. They prayed to Katyayani, you please arrange that the son of Nanda, the cowherd king Nanda, you make him our husband. So she prayed in that way, and her songs recorded in that Tirupavai, their songs of love to Krishna, they're chanted especially during what is the equivalent of the month of Magh, Margali, in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. And the girls, the Sri Vaishnava girls especially, then are supposed to know this. Very commonly chanted in all worship ceremonies. So this feeling of love for Krishna as a lover, it's promoted as the essence by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's also very, very prominent in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, which is a very important link, in the whole concept of God. Although they worship him as the Supreme Lord, but the idea of loving him as a female is actually chronologically in this world, in this Kali Yuga, it first came in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, and then later Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and developed that, you could say, in exponentially. Naam Alvar also had this feeling. Just in the latest Back to Godhead magazine, one Sri Vaishnava scholar based in England wrote an article comparing Srila Prabhupada and Ramanuja and the similarities between them. I just went through that and made a few notes and made a few points from that. I'll just speak on that. They were both obviously very, very powerful and significant acharyas who, even from the historical point of view, those who like to study religion in a historical way, both of them, they made a tremendous change in the tremendous innovations, tremendous impact that will last in the history of world religion. The 1000th anniversary of Ramanuja's birth is to be celebrated next year. We can, it's supposed to be that the Gaudiya Vaishnava, golden age, will go on for 10,000 years. So we're just at the beginning of that, in which Srila Prabhupada was the Senapati Bhakta, the great general of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who fulfilled Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prophecy that Krishna consciousness would be preached all over the world. At least Srila Prabhupada put that into motion, which no one had any idea of that. Similarly, when Ramanuja came, there was no clear idea or movement of Krishna consciousness. There were great Vaishnavas who had appeared before him, the Alvars. I can't pronounce the Tamil, but it's as good as you can get from me. So they were there, but Ramanuja made systematized the philosophy. That was the order given to him by Yamunacharya, which not spoken, but Ramanuja understood that from the three fingers. He had to make a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras to not only systematize the Siddhanta of Vaishnavism according to Shastra, according to Vedanta, but specifically that is in opposition to Shankara, whose explanation of Vedanta completely monopolized the whole Vedic or Vedanta scene at the time, which completely goes against the actual spirit of Vedanta, which is Sarvadhaman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Raja, to give up all varieties of religion and just surrender to Krishna. So that was a major innovation, you could say. Not really innovation, but revealing the actual truth, which had become lost in course of time. So Ramanuja revived that. And in this way, he brought in something which was unprecedented, unimagined, and of unlimited benefit to the whole world. In the same way, Srila Prabhupada brought to the Western world Krishna consciousness, which, although in the Western world is hardly appreciated yet, but the theological and philosophical contributions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought to the West by Srila Prabhupada, they are actually so much superior in both philosophically, we can say, and in terms of a process and understanding of God. We have to distribute the book so that people can understand. This is a great revolution in the history of the human race, how people can understand what their actual duty of life is and duty toward God. So they are both very powerful history changing acharyas, as this scholar Sri Ranga Priya Ramanuja Dasan, his name is. He's noted there that Srila Prabhupada quotes within his books. Srila Prabhupada put so much emphasis on his books as being so important. And within that, he quotes Ramanuja and his tradition over 100 times. And his tradition means subsequent acharyas also. He often quotes Viraragava Acharya, who's in the Ramanuja line, who gave a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada also very much liked to chant Mukunda Mala, which is a very favorite of the Sri Vaishnavas, Kulashekhar Alva. He composed that. And it's the prayers are full of what we would call bhakti, full of devotion in Mukunda Mala. And they express practically the same moods as we find in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshashtakam. The idea of being servant of the servant of the servant is very much emphasized therein. And the feeling of great gratefulness toward the Lord is saturated with bhakti, what we would call bhakti, saturated with devotion, let's say, saturated with loving feelings for the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada very much liked that. Ramanuja and Srila Prabhupada, they both reached out to everyone. They didn't make their teachings just for an exclusive few. They were both very scholarly. They both presented many, many scholarly writings for the benefit of the philosophical class of people. But in accord with the very nature of devotion to the Lord, they made it available to everyone. And of course, that was there in Ramanuja Sampradaya before he came, but he opened it up widely. Everyone was welcome. It's not just for the high caste people. Ramanuja accepted men and women from all castes and even outcasts. So similarly, Srila Prabhupada went to people who were considered ineligible. Not even considered ineligible. They were not even considered. Just leave out anything. Just not even considered. They've got nothing to do with all this. They're nothing to do. They're outside. But Srila Prabhupada brought them in. This scholar notes that both of them had difficult wives who impelled them towards sannyas. So we're very grateful to these wives. Both had very little time with their gurus. Of course, Ramanuja had several gurus. His first was Yamuna Acharya, who, it's difficult to say who was his first, exactly. But both, in the case of Yamuna Acharya and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, both marked this is a special person who will carry the future. Yamuna first saw Ramanuja in Sri Rangam, but there was no intercourse at that time, and noted, yes, this is a special person. Similarly, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, when he first saw, who was later to become our Srila Prabhupada, first said to him that you should preach Krishna consciousness in the English-speaking world. So they both noted at the beginning this very special person. Neither of them had extended association. Well, Ramanuja did have extended association with some of his gurus. He had various gurus, a mantra guru, then for teaching, Shastra, Srila Prabhupada, his guru. He also said, I didn't spend much time with him, but they were both able to link with their guru very strongly by that attitude of absolute devotion. And that's also very prominent in the Ramanuja Sampradaya. The mood of absolute devotion to the guru is very much stressed. Srila Prabhupada also stressed that very much, and service to the Vaishnavas is very much stressed. Another point, which the main point which this scholar and devotee makes in that article, is that both Ramanuja and Srila Prabhupada, focal point of their mission was to challenge and defeat the Advaitavad of Shankara, which Srila Prabhupada, following Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, calls Mayavad. So there's a brief overview of Sri Vaishnavas and Gaurya Vaishnavas. What time is the arati? Is it 6:30 or 7? The arati is at 7:30. Oh, it's very late. Sunday special. Okay. So what should I do now? There's so many devotees want to meet me.
There's some questions.
Yeah, so what should I do? Should I meet the devotees? Should I sit here and answer questions?
Some questions, at least.
Okay, question one. Though it was service that was emphasized by Ramanujacharyas, since it is always accompanied by examples of the Alvas' love for Krishna, especially now Malvas and Andals in a conjugal relationship, do you see there is room to say that Sri Vaishnava philosophy's accommodation love to be the highest goal? Well, it's not specifically stated to be. That was the... Although they are... Practically it's the same thing. There's no love without service. And the service that all Vaishnavas speak of, it's loving service. So it's really just a question of emphasis, of verbal emphasis. In this world, we also have to be careful to if we emphasize love without service, then there'll be a lazy approach, which is not really love at all. If we emphasize service without love, then it may be somewhat dry. So both are required. Gopal Bhatta Goswami came from the Sri Sampradaya. So how did the Sri Vaishnava emphasis, how are the Sri Vaishnava influences in Gaurya are not prominent, not predominant? Not predominant? Well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is... His influence is predominant, though the Sri Vaishnava influence is there also. The Gopal Bhatta is a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was born into that Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, but he later identified himself as a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Since Ramanuja is an expansion of Ananta Shesh, does he have a place in Vrindavan? Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya recognize him to be Ananta Shesha, Lakshman Deshika. They identify him in that way with Vishnu himself. We might say as what we would call a Shaktya Veshavata. Does he have a place in Vrindavan? Why Vrindavan? Who wrote this? Ananta Shesh, we don't hear so much of Ananta Shesh in Vrindavan. When Krishna and Balaram were on the way from Vrindavan to Mathura, Akrura saw them bathing as Vishnu lying on Ananta Shesh. But in Vrindavan, we don't hear so much about Ananta Shesh. I don't really understand the question. Are there any questions from yesterday? I think Krishna Kirti Prabhu already left. There were so many questions given. I don't know what happened to all those written questions. You can rewrite them.
Yeah, questions?
Some scholars state that Hari Bhaktivilas has a lot of smarter influence. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wrote that Gopal Bhatta, he wrote the Hari Bhaktivilas with smarters in mind. Not exactly smarter influence, but with the idea that the smarters may be somewhat pacified to think that the Gauriyas, they also follow many rules similar to them. Can Hari Bhaktivilas be taken as an authority without any reservation? It's a big discussion because all Gauriya Vaishnavas of various sampradayas, they all accept Hari Bhaktivilas to be authoritative, but no one follows everything in it. And it's not like all sampradayas, they all have their smriti shastras, which means the founder of the sampradaya or an important early member of the sampradaya takes many texts from shastra, because not all texts in shastra are meant for everyone. So they select those which are suitable to guide the behavior of the members of their sampradaya. But Hari Bhaktivilas is little and unusual in which it gives many, many directions. It's a very big work, and it doesn't appear that it's meant to be followed by everyone. In fact, at the end of the work, it's stated that this is mostly for householder Vaishnavas. And there's a whole section on deity worship, and it said this is especially meant for wealthy grihasthas who can afford to do all these things. So not everything is meant for everyone, and therefore it requires also one's guru to instruct you specifically what to follow. One who is not connected to ISKCON till his middle age might have planned his life with following some family rituals and some material settlements. And after coming here and knowing about spiritual living, which is completely different to the one which they have seen before, was ending up in confusion, as means even after knowing that spiritual living is good, was not able to come out of his past lifestyles, nor was he able to practice it. How to overcome this? Well, taking to Krishna consciousness doesn't necessarily mean completely changing your life. Srila Prabhupada often spoke about adding Krishna, but some things maybe have to be dropped out. As an extreme example, not an extreme example, but one that is applicable in some cases, is if one was living as a butcher, then he'd have to change his occupation. That actually happened. One of my godbrothers in England, who took to Krishna consciousness, he was a butcher, and then he took to Krishna consciousness. So obviously he gave up being a butcher. Otherwise, one can go on with his life and add Krishna. But the more and more we add Krishna, the less and less we become interested in that which is pratikul. Pratikul. So pratikul yasya varjanam, that which is detrimental to our advancement in Krishna consciousness. We shall have to give that up. So there might be some confusion, or rather some tug of war in our minds about what should I do. It's a different approach to life, but after understanding that life is meant for serving Krishna, surrendering to Krishna, then one has to reorientate one's life according to the principle anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varjanam, accepting that which is favorable for advancement in Krishna consciousness and rejecting that which is unfavorable. So many of the goals we may have had previously may be unfavorable. For instance, if we're thinking that I want to make a lot of money and enjoy myself in this world, that is, such an attitude is not favorable for advancing in Krishna consciousness. On the other hand, as long as one is a householder with family responsibilities. He has to make some money. Of course, he could also make some major adjustment, like, for instance, joining one of our farm communities. So one has to see in an individual case. But some confusion may arise because one is not sure what is, can this be dovetailed, that word Srila Prabhupada used, can I dovetail this in Krishna's service or not? So for that, one may require some guidance about what one should do practically, how to practically live one's life in Krishna consciousness. If you have debts to pay off, well, it's a great burden whether or not one is in Krishna consciousness or not. That can't be neglected. If one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples attempted to execute one of his orders but did so improperly, even vastly different from what Srila Prabhupada had wanted, could that person ever attain perfection, keeping in mind that Srila Prabhupada left earth early on? Attempting to execute the order of the spiritual master but improperly. Well, Krishna addresses that in Bhagavad Gita, doesn't he? He says that, sava rambahi doshena, that in every endeavor in this world there is some kind of fault. So we can't expect that everything done in this world will be done properly. Some of the orders that Srila Prabhupada gave were attempts to execute them turned out to be disastrous. Well, particularly one of them, Gurukul, the Srila Prabhupada's desire for Gurukul, many cases was executed in a very improper way. Could a person attain perfection if he was? Well, Krishna sees the endeavor. If someone in trying to serve Srila Prabhupada goes off course to a very bad extent, then we can't say that Srila Prabhupada would accept that. But could that person ever attain perfection? There's nothing stopping anyone attaining perfection, however many mistakes we make, although some mistakes may be more serious than others and may put our spiritual advancement on hold or even put it in reverse. But there's nothing Vaishnava Parad and that will impede, that more than anything will impede our advancement. But even that we can overcome. It is, but intrinsically the soul is an eternal servant of Krishna, and that can never be cut or stopped. So we may go slowly, we may not go forward, we may even go apparently backwards, but we can never be completely cut off from Krishna. He's speaking in the service of Srila Prabhupada, reserved for exalted devotees. Read my book, Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's Service. This is discussed in some detail. Vaishnava does not seem to be one of the Varnas, then why did Srila Prabhupada want to establish Varnashram system? You have to read Srila Prabhupada's books and you can understand all of this. Where one is considered superior or inferior. However, in the Vaishnava community, everyone considers himself lower than everyone else, dasa nudasa. Yeah, I spoke about this just now. If you would have been present, you would have heard that a Vaishnava is above all the Varnas and ashrams intrinsically, but he may take such a role to show to others how the Varnashram society should be established. We don't consider anyone higher or lower according to their caste background. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Nicha jati nahi Krishna bhajanaya yoga, shatkupya pramahi bhajanaya yoga. Je bhaje she boro bhaktihino cha Krishna bhajane nahik jat kuladi bicha. One is not rejected from worshipping Krishna simply because one is of lower birth or of a lower social status. Nor does a higher social status automatically qualify one for devotion to Krishna. One is considered higher or lower in Vaishnava society according to the degree of his bhakti, not by any other means. And if one has no bhakti, even if he's supposed to be very high, he's not considered high in terms of devotion. There's no such consideration in Krishna bhakti. But still, there requires to be a gradation in human society. It's for the organization of human society, that's all. As long as we're living in this world, we require some organization. I think I'm just going to take one more question and then stop here because I'm losing my voice. I mentioned the interactions of Lord Rama with the sages in Dandakaranya, wherein they wanted further association with him. Why didn't Valmiki Muni include these conversations in Aranyakanda? Well, if you ever meet him, you could ask him. Not everything is in every shastra. Valmiki also didn't, in at least the version of Valmiki Ramayana that we have, we also don't have the story of Lakshman Rekha. We don't have the story of Shabari eating fruit and giving it to Lord Rama. So why didn't he include it? You may have to ask him whenever you meet him. And not everything is in every shastra. Hare Krishna. Yeah, I'll finish there.